Hey guys, thanks for listening. If you'd like to support us, go to patreon.com/frightday.
I'm sorry. I'm ready. I'm ready.
Are you sure?
I'm ready.
Because you seem like the opposite of ready.
I'm ready.
All right, it seems like you're full-blown crying. Fright Day, I'm your host, Byron. 17 years after finding some of the most infamous footage ever, more tapes have been found in the Black Hills Forest outside Burkittsville, Maryland. I never thought I was going to get a chance to say this, but tonight, the legend continues in Adam Wingard's Blair Witch. And I don't need to tell you that the woods can be a dangerous place. Mm-hmm. But in case you're curious, we're talking a few instances of people disappearing without a trace. In this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies, I'm joined today by Kelly.
Hi.
And Sam.
Hey, guys.
You guys ever want to be on a reality show? Like
no.
when you were younger, did you ever want to be on like Real World?
No, because I always knew I'd be the
Fear
unpopular
Factor.
Kid.
Fear Factor sounds kind of exciting, yeah.
Yeah, like the eating spiders part.
Okay. The cockroaches.
The hissing cockroaches. That appealed to me.
Also, I had no interest in that, Sam. I also didn't know anything about this Big Brother show in the UK. I know it came to the United States pretty soon after, but apparently it was a really big thing.
Way bigger in UK.
I watched a series this week that came out on Netflix.
You did?
It's from 2008. It's a UK series called Dead Set. Do you know anything about this?
No, huh?
Grayson, Marky, and Pippa.
7 minutes to go, minions.
Can you take Ashley into the BBLB room?
Yeah, I'm on it.
I don't know this job.
Oi, Barbara. I said, is that your eviction outfit?
It's not really real, is it?
This is Big Brother.
He started it!
I'm a bit concerned, actually. We might get bumped for the news.
Stockwell, Cardiff, Portsmouth.
What do people want? Anyway, it's not the 80s.
Stop breathing!
Eyewitnesses describe dead or injured people attacking one another en masse.
5 seconds! Make some noise!
Something is wrong!
They're dead.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Shut up!
This is not happening.
They're dead.
You're alive.
Does this mean we're not on telly anymore?
It takes place during a eviction ceremony. They evict someone and then they leave immediately and do all these interviews. But behind the scenes here, there's this crazy zombie epidemic kind of boiling over. It's a 5-part series. This zombie invasion happens, and some of the people working in the Big Brother show end up going into the Big Brother set during this invasion to try to, like,
really?
Survive. It's kind of like 28 Days Later, the remake of Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
We're talking fast zombies. I really, really dug this.
It sounds awesome.
The gore was incredible. And although it did take a lot from, like I said, 28 Days Later and Dawn of the Dead, it was very well done. So yeah, check this out on Netflix. Did you guys watch The Night Of yet?
No.
No.
So Nas from The Night Of, the main character, is in this.
Hold on. Nas as in the musician or Nas as in John Turturro?
No, the supposed murderer in The Night Of.
Is that the character's
name? All right. Yeah.
You're out of your element.
Yeah, it's okay. Just check it out. It's
okay.
On Netflix. I highly recommend this.
Byron, that sounds like a good one.
It takes a lot to get me to watch a zombie show. I guess this week a lot would be me having to print like 1,000 t-shirts, but I was very happy to have this on in my peripheral.
I'm with you on that. Sitting down to watch a zombie movie is one thing, but committing to a 5-hour, I assume, series?
Yeah. I think it's a really interesting idea. Apparently it was on Channel 4. You know how they have whatever BBC has channels?
Yes.
Yeah.
BBC One.
Four.
I don't
BBC
know what
two.
This was called, but it's like the HBO version. It's called E4. So it's like a paid subscription channel off of Channel 4.
I think we should have somebody, one of our listeners across the pond, report to us on exactly what all that means. I don't understand.
I think
that
a simple Google search would work as well.
That Wikipedia has the answer.
Honestly, one of the best zombie things I've seen in a long, long time.
I need something to make me not as just fed up and tired of zombies as I am.
I love zombies. Hey, you guys know something? This week, I know I'm really behind the times, but there's been a lot going on. So I finally started watching season 2 of Wayward. I think it's really interesting. The one thing I didn't like is when they set it up in the little synopsis going into episode 1. Like, okay, you just covered some major reveals there. And you treated it like it was nothing.
The worst.
Like, what the fuck? What just happened?
All right. The first season was very mysterious. A lot happens.
Right. And it was sneaky.
Kind of like
and
the first season of Lost.
One of the worst things that I had to do, I don't know what show we were watching. It was a Fox show I was watching with my friend Luke every week. They'd show these promos for Wayward Pines and they'd dump like the whole first season reveal in the top of the show, like you're saying.
Yeah.
And I'm like, stop, every time because it blows the entire first season.
But this wasn't even the first season reveal. This was like what happened between the first season and the second season. They're like, Ben's done this, Ben's done what? I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, that could have been 3 episodes worth of material. What did you just do?
It's completely ridiculous.
I didn't really like that. But then once the first episode got rolling, I'm interested. I think it's a really cool direction. Obviously, it's a very different direction than the way it felt at the beginning of first season. But I think you got to kind of let go with that and go with the flow.
It turns into more of like a dystopian.
Oh, it's Hunger Games. Like, yeah. Okay.
The butting of heads is more of the focus than the outside elements.
Yeah, but I think those are worth
waiting
for.
Whoa, we don't talk about that.
That's the are from season 1. We can talk about the
Yeah, it's like episode 4 of season 1.
Dude, it's been out for a year and
I'm
a half.
I'm beeping it still, nonetheless.
Beep whatever you want.
Come on, dude.
You know, just take that
it
whole
stands
track.
For
stop it. I'm beeping all
and
of
they
it.
Have really
that's enough. All right.
They look like Sam when he gets angry.
I don't know what part of that to beep.
Okay.
You're going to keep watching it. Even yeah. It's not as good as the first season.
Well, I can't say that yet. I'm only an episode in, but it's different. I'm okay with different, though.
All right. Good. You're tired?
Yeah, I was watching Wayward Pines.
Oh, Sam, what have you been up to?
I watched a movie called Don't Go in the House.
Is that an old movie?
It is. It's from 1980.
What?
It's not very good.
Okay.
Donnie Kohler, he's a grown man. He's been terribly abused by his mother as a child. She used to burn him with a gas stove, torch the evil out of him.
Ooh, okay.
He goes a little loopy and starts abducting women, and he builds a stainless steel room in his house and starts flamethrowing the women.
I mean, that's a little extreme, don't you think?
It's a rough way to exercise past demons.
The fire thing.
Yeah.
Stuck with him.
Yeah, the fire is the cleanser. And then he starts hearing the voice of the fire and the voice of his mother.
Oh, okay.
Who's dad also.
Is so it's kind his of dad the
psycho
fire?
Thing. His mother's dead.
Oh, I thought you said his mother's
and so
dad.
So there's kind of like a psycho thing
too.
Happening as well.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. He eventually starts to realize that he feels bad for what he's done, so he repents to a priest, and it just all culminates in the priest and one of his buddies. I'm going to ruin this for everybody.
Sure.
Oh, sure, don't him.
Of course I'm not going to Sam.
God.
The priest and one of Donnie's work buddies, you know, come to the house at the last minute to save these two girls that he's abducted, and the priest gets flamethrowered, and Donnie starts hallucinating all of the women that he's...
Flamethrowered?
Yeah.
That's not a verb.
Yeah, it is now.
Oh, it's kind of like the Covina Christmas Eve Massacre, remember?
Yeah,
what episode was that?
That was terrifying.
Yeah.
And this was not.
This was not terrifying.
No,
zero scare.
Then he hallucinates that his victims have come back to life and are kind of like chastising him. And so he's trying to burn them again, but he just ends up setting the whole house on fire around him.
Yeah, and that'll do it.
It just wasn't very good. The gore effect, well, there was basically no gore. The fire effects were not great. Lots of real obvious fire suits.
Oh.
I don't know what they call it, where fire is superimposed.
Like an overlay?
Yeah, like an overlay.
Interesting.
I'm glad I watched it. It was fun. I was watching it on Amazon, and when I clicked on it, it actually showed that it was going to be playing The Burning, even though I'd clicked on the...
You should be watching The Burning. I love The Burning.
Which is clearly what Amazon was trying to tell me. That was kind of what I watched this week.
Joseph Ellison... was the director of this film, and he's only done 2 films, and his second film was called Joey, which the tagline is the story of a rock and roll rebel featuring an all-star soundtrack.
Wow. Who's the all-star soundtrack?
I'm not going to read more of this. I don't know.
We'll assume it's terrible.
Yeah. I'd imagine it was not an all-star soundtrack, but yeah, that's interesting. You dug into Amazon.
and something was there right on the surface.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, you know, I have a soft spot in my heart for those like early mid 80s slashers.
Of course, yeah.
And yeah, so I'm glad I actually am glad I watched it because now I know.
Watch The Burning, please. This is Amazon's like the mass grave of horror films.
You got to sort through the corpses.
Yeah, maybe Shudder is like a very nice upscale, like Hollywood like Forever Cemetery, you know?
Or like a mausoleum where everybody has nice plaques on the doors.
Just remember that everybody deserves respect, even the shitty graveyard.
Oh, I love the shit out of Amazon Prime. That's not...
There's no denying that, but... Are you gonna make it?
I'm good. I just need to talk about something interesting. You guys are boring the shit out of me.
All right.
Oh, I'm sorry, Kelly.
Yeah, it's all right. I watched a lot of Veep this week, too.
Oh, my God. All right, let's move on. Disappearances, one of your favorite things.
Yeah, it's amazing. I feel like maybe we should just do an offshoot show on only disappearances.
I mean, it's possible. I think that there's a podcast called Disappeared, but...
Well, fuck them. This would be way better.
I don't know.
I agree.
Yeah, but this is... It we're talking be Friday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Disappearances in the great outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
In this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Well, you guys, one of our earlier episodes, actually the first Captain Kelly's episode.
Are we talking episode 58?
Disappearances in the National Parks. We scratched the surface there, but the number of disappearances, even if we were going to just do disappearances in National Parks, which we aren't, so I guess that's not relevant, but...
all right.
But the number of people that disappear all over the place... in weird circumstances, my God, it's a bottomless pit. I don't even know what to do with it. First time I saw Blair Witch Project when I was just a wee little bit of a thing, it scared the shit out of me. The idea of being in the woods alone, something could happen, you could disappear and never be seen again. So part of it was the woods piece, but part of it was just this idea that you could just vanish off the face of the planet and nobody would know what happened to you.
Just not being found is more frightening to you?
Yeah, not being found is way more frightening.
Oh, man.
But you would be...
dead.
Would be dead.
Yeah, so, but my ghost would be really, really upset about the whole scenario.
Well, no.
If you get lost in the woods and you die, is your ghost also still confused about where they are?
It's interesting. A lot of the stories about people who disappear in the woods and supposedly got lost, a bunch of bunk. They didn't actually get lost. I think a lot of people go in like trying to get lost and dead.
Okay.
And then other people...
It's like a suicide forest kind of thing.
Right.
Okay,
and really,
Gahara.
Every forest is a suicide forest. People freaking go and kill themselves in like every forest. They just are like, I'm going to go out with nature and I'm going to go out.
Oh, yeah. There's a corpse behind every tree around here.
Pretty much.
What it's a regular Easter morning.
Actually, I think it was a quote in Blair Witch that we watched this week, you guys. One of the characters, didn't he say, oh, no matter where you are on Earth, somebody died in that very spot you were standing.
Which, I mean, you're always concerned because this was on the Lewis and Clark Trail, the location of this house right now.
Yeah, so my guess is there were traumatic deaths here.
Well, why? It was a peaceful expedition.
I have come to realize that all of the stories we learned about explorers and white settlers were lies, and that Columbus was a raping asshole, and I assume Lewis and Clark probably were too.
Just like a heavy metal music video, one foot up on someone carrying them through the woods.
Yeah.
Until they fall down like a fly and they get another person.
Are you going to play music there?
What kind of music?
I assume Sam would pick that one. I don't know.
No,
I think that's
I'm
a Sam's jam moment.
That's true.
I'm not participating.
Anyhow, back on track, we're going to talk tonight about some interesting disappearances and some interesting encounters in the woods. I'm going to veer a little bit off the woods path, but only...
Wait, whoa.
Only briefly for one story that I think is an incredibly strange story that I just have to talk about.
Okay.
So we're going to start with a story tonight, because I know you guys always appreciate it when I'm a skeptic.
Absolutely.
Right? So we're going to start tonight with a story of... I don't know if you guys have heard this, but it's more of an urban legend, and it has to do with hippies... at Stonehenge. You guys know about this?
Hippies at Stonehenge?
Yeah.
No, I don't know anything about that.
Just so you know, I'm always trying to prove things are true because it makes me much happier when they're true. I dug a lot and I can't find any evidence of this one other than recitations of the exact same story over and over. And it's all over the internet. You can find it everywhere, but it's always very similar
wording.
So it happened.
It sounds like modern journalism here.
Yeah.
It is modern journalism, but it happened in 1971. The same story recited over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, and no links to any type of original news articles or anybody that was a witness, even though there were supposedly two witnesses. So, all right, here we go. the mysterious standing stones of Stonehenge in England were the site of an amazing disappearance in August of 1971. At this time, Stonehenge was not yet protected from the public. And on this particular night, a group of hippies decided to pitch tents in the center of the circle and spend the night.
Whatever happened to them, they deserved it.
Only because they're hippies. Really, Sam?
Land there, kind of laying out on some stone.
Yeah, but
slabs.
It wasn't illegal then.
No, yeah, it doesn't matter if it's illegal or not. And yeah, the hippie thing.
They built a campfire, lit several joints of pot, and sat around smoking and singing.
Marijuana cigarettes?
Yes. Their campout was abruptly interrupted at about 2 a.m. by severe thunderstorms that quickly blew over the Salisbury Plain, like Salisbury steak.
You get to say that, but you're mad at us for saying doobie?
Bolts of lightning crashed down on the area. Can't you guys just see this? It's kind of a cool visual.
I'm imagining hippies getting struck by lightning on the moors.
Striking area trees and even the standing stones themselves. Two witnesses, a farmer and a policeman. No explanation of why the farmer or policeman were standing around Stonehenge at 2 in the morning.
Probably keeping an eye on the hippies.
Said
Stonehenge. Can we say that?
Absolutely.
Can we say that?
I think I just quit.
That's all it took. Thank you so much for that report.
Okay, so the policeman and the farmer said that the stones of the ancient monument lit up with an eerie blue light that was so intense they had to avert their eyes. They heard screams from the campers, and the two witnesses rushed to the scene expecting to find injured or even dead campers / hippies. To their surprise, they found no one. All that remained within the circle of stones were several smoldering tent pegs and the drowned remains of a campfire. The hippies themselves were gone without a trace, never to be seen again.
Some sort of extraterrestrial portal?
Yeah, so all these people post about it all over, like, only the stones know what happened.
Oh, No stones are
That sounds like a Mel's Hole song in the making.
Oh, God, you want to make it?
No.
So they're gone.
They're gone.
Smoldering tent pegs.
Smoldering tent pegs, disappeared hippies in nature. Not technically the woods, but in nature.
What's your theory?
That it didn't happen.
Interesting.
Yeah, my theory is that it didn't happen. And apparently some of the postings say that it's miraculously similar to some TV show plot, which could be that that writer read the story and was like, oh, that's a cool idea for a TV show. But yeah, anybody that has any other information, because literally I just saw that over and over and over and over again.
And what do they call that?
The disappearing hippies, the hippies at Stonehenge, the blue stones of Stonehenge, lots of different names. So the other thing that we're going to go into today is a little bit more in-depth story, I think, that I touched on when we did our National Parks episode, a disappearance at Crater Lake. But we're going to go a little further into it because it's a pretty interesting story. And when I researched a bunch about it, there was enough to really dive deep. So there have been tons and tons and tons and tons of disappearances at Crater Lake. But this really early story is pretty fun. 1853, this group of people sets out from Eureka, California. Maybe it's just pronounced Eureka.
And before we do that, can we get into what Crater Lake is?
Crater Lake, Oregon.
Yeah, but I mean, it's...
Oh my God.
I know it's a lake, but it's very deep.
It was made of a crater?
It's a ridiculously deep lake.
It was a volcano.
The most beautiful blue water and is basically bottomless.
Bottomless. It's a direct pipeline.
What's wrong with you?
It's a direct pipeline to inner Earth.
Is that what we're going with?
No, but we are going to talk about inner Earth a little later in the episode.
I regret participating.
Right. I'm sorry.
1853, this party sets out from Yreka, California.
Are we going Eureka?
Could be.
All right.
To look for their lost friend. So this is a really fun part. Their lost friend's name is Set 'em Up. Set 'em Up had mysteriously...
It's not a name.
Fuck that guy.
He had mysteriously vanished from his mining cabin, which was nestled at the base of Mount Mazama. Set 'em Up always came into Eureka with more than enough gold to buy the whole saloon around. This is why he has friends coming to look for him. Probably not because they necessarily care about him, but they think that he might have some good shit. He would throw a little satchel of gold at the barkeep and holler, "Set 'em Up!" Which is what earned him his nickname.
And very exciting.
Okay?
Yeah.
His real name has been lost to history, unfortunately. His generosity also earned him the rabble of friends who fretted so much about their missing buddy's safety and the safety of his vacant claim. So they had a rough idea of where Set 'em Up's mine was. And after no one had heard from him for a couple of years, I love the olden times when that's like your sister gets concerned when it's been a couple of days. Well, Set 'em Up's friends got concerned after a couple of years and thought that they'd travel on up and check it out, see how he's doing. They decided that they, being his loyal friends, might as well be the ones to find the claim if he was indeed gone. So they got all their supplies ready in Jacksonville, Oregon, and headed off into the forests around Mount Mazama.
Mount Midoriyama?
And it's Wairika.
It is Wairika, yeah. And we're not talking about Ninja Warrior.
Okay. The forest that they headed into really hadn't been investigated that thoroughly. But I mean, they were a little bit creeped out, but they were pretty excited because they figured this guy always had money. This is worth it. So one party split to the left when they hit a fork in the trail, and one party split to the right. They vowed to meet back at that very fork in the road before nightfall. Here's what happened. Isaac Skeeters, who had gone to the right fork, suddenly came to a point where his horse refused to budge. Feeling curious, he dismounted to see what had blocked their way. He found himself perched on the rim of Crater Lake. So smart horse wasn't going to dive into the lake, all right? Disappointed because he felt like he'd probably chosen the wrong direction, he took note of his discovery and hurried back to the rendezvous point at the fork to see, hey, you guys find anything better than what I found? But when he reached the fork, a man named Hillman, who had taken the left path, rode up waving his arms, and he had spotted this small, teeny tiny cabin that was beat to hell. It was beside a stream, which was coming from a shallow canyon. The two were galloping through the forest to claim their fortune when Hillman's horse lost its footing on a rock and tumbled over the edge of a canyon. Poor horsey.
What, was there a person on the
horse?
Was
the guy? Yeah.
Well,
don't just say that.
Both the clumsy horse and its rider died on impact.
Okay.
Poor horse.
Poor guy.
Poor horse, taking the location of the lost cabin with them. Despite their best efforts, Skeeters and the team couldn't find any trace of the little cabin by the creek that had been yelled about. They soon ran low on provisions and had to head home. All they had found was a stupid lake. Although many have tried, no one has ever relocated this cabin to this day. So I think that he actually was going into the inner earth and he was getting coupons of gold. And so I think that that's where Set 'Em Up was, because nobody ever found this cabin, which is really, really, really weird. You know, it's not like the area hasn't been explored.
Yeah.
And nobody ever found this mining claim or the cabin, which is just strange.
Do you guys, when I was a kid, I found a cabin in the woods across where my grandparents had a lake house.
Did you get kidnapped and murdered there?
No, but we should do an EVPs there. We have to row a boat across the lake and then climb a cliff. But
I'll let you and Sam do that. That sounds do it? Scary as
sure.
shit.
All right. I'll do it.
Sounds fun to
me. Oh, God, that sounds horrible.
So you're worried that there's a bunch of gold laying loose in this cabin.
Well, not only is there gold, but this whole idea that they haven't been able to find it again, does that remind you of this movie we watched this week where there's this house in the woods that is very heavily documented, but nobody can find?
Yeah.
Kind of interesting, huh?
So it's interesting.
This all happened by Crater Lake.
Or didn't you hear me say that the guy rode up to the edge of Crater Lake and his horse almost
yes,
fell in?
Yes, I did.
Just making sure you were paying attention.
I was just going to comment on Wairika's proximity to Mount Shasta.
Well, yeah, inner earth.
Yeah.
Lumerians.
Yeah. Wait.
Duh.
So wait, what?
We haven't done an episode about the Lemurians.
Oh, I feel like we have,
no,
didn't
absolutely
we?
No, absolutely not.
I think it's like Lemurians.
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 I used to sponsor a band called Lemuria. So.
Did they know what they were talking about?
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Could we contact them?
No, what?
Okay.
The fuck are you talking about?
So Set 'Em Up disappeared, which is weird, but not super weird, because, you know, it was
people
the olden days.
People went missing in the 1800s.
Right, but for his entire cabin and mining claim to go missing, especially when people were trying to find it because they knew that there was literally gold there. It's very, very strange. And that was kind of one of the earlier stories, but things just kept happening. Some of those stories, again, we talked about in episode 58. Pretty creepy. That's one of those places where I don't think I'd do much exploring without some serious equipment and a lot of flare guns.
I'm with you, but only because I'm lazy.
Oh, just that you would bring flare guns or that you just wouldn't go?
Just wouldn't do a lot of exploring.
Oh. Anyhow, we're going to do one more Crater Lake piece before I leave Crater Lake. In 1975, a photographer, Charles McCuller, was wandering around Crater Lake during some pretty harsh February storms. Searchers turned up no trace of him despite the help of FBI and his distraught father, who did everything he could to find the son. A year later, in 1976, two hikers saw what they thought was a skeleton down a box canyon in a remote area of the park, more than 12 miles from where Charles had been taking pictures along the rim when he disappeared. 12-foot drifts of snow were reported during the time of McCuller's disappearance, with 102 inches of fresh snowfall covering the ground all over the park. For an ill-equipped person to make it 12 miles in those conditions, 12 miles from where he disappeared, pretty tough to believe, right? The hikers that found this skeleton brought a tattered backpack and a few other items they found into the park ranger
station.
They
didn't want to stuff the skeleton into the backpack?
Well, no, because it was down in a crevasse.
Okay.
A box canyon, which is very different from a crevasse, but I just like saying crevasse. The hikers brought the stuff back into the ranger station. They rummaged through the pack, and rangers immediately identified a distinctive Volkswagen key, which they knew had belonged to McCuller. So they got on their horses, rode to this canyon in the middle of the park, basically were blown away by what they found.
Please say more skeletons. Please say more skeletons. Please say more skeletons.
One 30-year ranger described it as the strangest thing he had ever seen. It appeared as though Charles had, quote from the ranger, melted right into his jeans while sitting on a log.
One more time, what was that?
Melted.
Melted.
Wow.
His pants hadn't been disturbed by animals or removed before his death. There were socks on his jeans, and there were toe bones in the socks, but these ended with a bit of broken tibia. Okay, so literally his legs are broken off the tibia.
What happened to the fibula?
The pants are still there.
It's got a loose tib.
The socks are filled with toe bones in place. Weird.
Uh-huh.
The rest of Charles was mysteriously absent from the site of his demise.
Ooh.
A thorough search of the lonesome canyon turned up tiny bone fragments in the crown of his skull about 12 feet away. And that was all that was ever
found.
Wait,
the crown of his skull was 12 feet away? Wait. Hey, ghost.
Is that you, Charles? Charles?
Charles, are
Charles?
You there?
Oh, sorry, Charles. I didn't mean to piss you off.
I mean, we are talking about his loose tib and his sock full of bones.
Right. Everything between the cap of his skull and his broken off tibia just whoop. Additionally, Charles' jeans were unbuttoned and his belt undone. No shirt or coat was ever found, and the most perplexing of all, the rangers couldn't find his boots.
Huh.
As you know from our previous episode, that's kind of a common theme with some of these national park disappearances, is missing shoes.
They like to pop off their clothes, especially when they're, ooh, hypothermic, though. Ooh.
Yeah, but popping off your clothes and missing your boots are two totally different things. And also, that doesn't account for having half of your body just mysteriously gone.
So we're talking Dyatlov Pass. Is that what you're referencing here?
Could be.
I know that when you are hypothermic, you do want to take off your clothes.
Oh, absolutely.
You feel like you're hot when you're not.
Absolutely. But why would...
I learned that in the movie Daylight, starring Sylvester Stallone.
Why would the jeans still be intact, but no shirt or coat found, no boots found? Why is he 12 miles away from where he disappeared?
I jog like 7 miles.
But in the middle of the snow, in the middle of the winter, with no equipment, going 12 miles from where you disappeared, and then suddenly melting away and leaving nothing but your tibia down.
It's mysterious.
And your
and
skull
it's a
cap.
Disappearance.
It
and,
is a disappearance.
And how long was the period between when he was lost and when he was found?
It was only a year later.
The only thing I would have to say about his boots would be maybe small animals drug off the leather.
Why wouldn't they drag off the rest of his clothes and jeans? Why wouldn't they drag off his belt?
How about just him, I guess?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I was just thinking of if you leave things like in a shed or a barn, a lot of times small animals will gnaw the leather.
Just weird. Okay.
Very weird.
For the next story, we are going across a bigger pond than Crater Lake. We're going to fly over to England. There's this incredible researcher that I talked about briefly during my National Parks episode. We didn't get into many of her stories because they weren't National Park stories because they're England. Her name is Steph, but she writes as Stephen.
I remember Steph Stephen.
Steph Stephen. Yeah, and apparently she has even another alias that she writes as. She's really cool, and she's got a great British accent. She's been on Howard Hughes' paranormal show and a lot of other podcasts. I'd love to get her on this at some point because she is one interesting chickadee, let me tell you. But she's got a lot of cool stories, and this is one that I listened to her talk about and I would like to share with you guys. In 1970, there was this fella named Paul. There are a lot of UFO societies over in England, you know, similar to how there are in the States. And this guy named Paul belonged to one. He called himself the Watcher. And one night he gets out of a pub. Yes, I know. He just got out of a pub.
I wasn't going to say anything.
He's near Enfield.
Oh, home of the Enfield poltergeist.
Yeah.
It's a fake.
It is a fake. He sees lights. Well, I don't know. There are some things that might not be fake about it. It was at least exaggerated. So he sees lights above this forest right when he gets out of the pub. He saw these two white horizontal objects that looked to be attached to a cable, and they descended into the forest by this reservoir, and then they went back up again, made these strange movements, and then they went down again. So he kind of just made a note of it since he was part of this society, keeps reports on things. But then 2 years later, in this very same place, at this very same reservoir in this very same forest, two kids went missing. These two kids, when the search parties came out, the families were told not to speak to anyone about the missing children. There was a total news blackout on the story at the time. Not only did they have plainclothes officers, but they had army searching for the children. As they were searching, they took samples of the dirt, samples of grass. The grass still won't grow there to this day, apparently. So Paul's kind of watching this. Paul the Watcher is watching. And he's like, this is pretty weird. I'm going to kind of dig into things a little bit more. Obviously ran into a lot of walls. Nobody would talk to him. He was told to leave the case alone. For a number of years, people...
He's a suspect, right?
No. Paul wasn't a suspect.
You sure? I mean, they usually return to the scene and are like...
Hey, and want to help out.
What's going on? Any news with this?
Yeah, but he wasn't. He wasn't
can
a suspect.
Can I help with the search?
Yeah.
No, he wasn't a suspect. And for a number of years...
Maybe he should be, though.
People thought that this was a UFO abduction just gone wrong. So here's what's really strange. 3 months after these two children disappeared, the bodies returned to an area that had been searched 1,000 times over. They were laying right next to each other.
What was that guy's name again? The Watcher?
Paul.
Paul? So Paul brought the bodies back.
You need to leave Paul alone. Paul's a good man.
I'm just saying.
You just wait for the rest of the story. One of the girls' shoes was missing. There were some pieces of clothes missing. But the police felt like the appropriate story was that they had died of exposure. I mean, honestly, at this point, the logical conclusion that I would make is they were abducted. And then returned, not necessarily by aliens, but like by some type of child predator, you know, somebody horrible.
Uh-huh.
Because there are pieces of clothes missing. Some of those pieces were undergarments. The kids were returned to this place.
I appreciate you not saying panties. I've been watching that JonBenet doc and they just can't stop.
I've heard it's one of the worst things ever.
It's fine.
Okay, I've heard it's really bad. 2 years after the kids are found, Paul's, again, driving around this area because this is where he lives, right? So he's driving by the area where
he
saw the lights. Does he
look like an elementary school?
Stop it with Paul. It is not Paul. God damn it, it's not Paul.
All right. Sounds like Paul.
Yeah. 2 years later, he's driving around with a friend who's also an investigator, member of one of these UFO societies. And while they're driving by this area,
Mambla,
they're like, okay, so these guys pull over, Paul and his buddy. They're like, let's just check it out. It's middle of the night. And they have their binocs because they're good investigators, right? Investigators would have binocs.
Binoculars for normal people.
Binocs. So they get
their... Hey, I have binoculars.
They get binocs out. I think he was correcting my use of binocs versus binoculars.
Binocs.
They're looking over in this reservoir where the kids have been discovered. And they see something pretty weird, guys. Pretty weird. They see a figure that looks to be wearing like a black robe. Looks to be about the size of a human. With long white hair, and as they get zoomed in on him enough, no face.
Just a flat surface.
Faceless face. They comb around and see a second figure, very, very similar looking to this first one, that's a little bit away from the first figure. They turn to each other and are going, what the hell is going on up there? That's really weird. Then they look back. The figures are gone, but now there are two different figures, still roughly human size. These ones without robes, also without faces, darting around aimlessly, just like running all over the place.
Well,
like
they cannot see. Let's be real.
Zigzagging, running around.
They have robes in their eyes.
I guess that's true. Would you not move? If you couldn't see anything, I think I'd just freaking stand there. I don't think I'd move an inch.
I think I'd be at a full sprint all the time.
Somebody!
That's how you get lost in the woods.
That's horrible.
It's like by not having eyes.
It's like I'm a human pinball.
So Paul and his buddy get freaked out and they run away. And after about an hour, they get courage up to go back again. And at this point, they see this red light that's hovering. The figures are gone, but there's this creepy red light. So they go and take this information to their society that they belong to. And they decide to do some further research. They go back to the site to look for physical evidence the next day. They find a bunch of broken branches and some burned things, which they're hoping will help. But basically, the society's like, that really doesn't do much. I mean,
also, do you know anything about these kids that went missing?
A report on this was published in The Voice and an American UFO Society publication. It kind of made the rounds. It was a big deal at the time. They never figured out what happened, but they went and interviewed a couple people who had previously reported seeing a red light in the same area on the same night. And when they investigated these people, it was like they had been zapped by Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones' eye zapper. They went and interviewed one guy who filed a report and said he was standing on the porch watching this red light at this exact same time. And the guy's like, what are you talking about? I never saw anything. I was sitting in my front room watching TV. What are you talking about? But there was an actual report filed by this guy. There were a couple other people, similar circumstances. A little bit weird. So here's where we get to something that makes a little sense with this case. In, I think it was 2001, maybe it was even 2010. It was a long time down the road.
Peter's basement.
There was a killer in jail for killing one kid. And he confesses to killing these other two kids at the same time, which the police swore they had died from exposure, but it was never officially ascertained what the cause of death was. He says, yep, it was me. I did it.
You know, this is a tactic to extend people's life when they get caught for killing people, to admit to other murders so that court cases.
Right. Here's where the story gets really interesting. Our buddy Steph dug up this story from a newspaper at the time who had interviewed the killer's cellmate. And apparently the cellmate had been placed in the cell next to this guy, eventually moved into the same cell as him, with the purpose of extracting information from the killer about a child abuse ring he had been involved in.
This makes more and more sense.
Really, really creepy, though. The killer says that he was a driver, and he would drive children to these auctions in these really fancy mansions in and around Surrey. Yeah, doesn't that make you nauseous?
That's pretty gross.
Yeesh.
And now, if Steph didn't come out and say this, but based on the information that she was reporting and kind of the conclusions I'm drawing, it sounds to me like, I'm sure there's some really weird shit going on around there, but that what those guys might have seen that night were possibly a couple kids running around in the woods. And there could be some weird eyes wide shut type society, except instead of consenting adults, it's poor little children.
Kind of like Fred and Rosemary West.
Oh, let's not talk about them ever.
I mean, at some point I'd like to talk about them.
But the theory is that because a lot of people have come up with stories like this and have reported similar weird situations, it sounds like there may be some type of a child porn, child abuse ring going on involving some really wealthy, high level people in the Surrey area. The reason that all of this weird shit happened with the kids and that the people were not supposed to talk about it and that everybody said, oh, they just died of exposure, leave it alone, was because it was all tied to that kind of a ring, which we'll never know probably what really happened. But these poor kids, it was known as the Babes in the Woods story. Oh, if anybody Jesus. Wants to look
Come
it up more
now, guys.
Really super, super scary, though, guys.
Whose phone is that?
It's mine. Sorry. But isn't that creepy, you guys? So that's one of those cases Yes. where it starts out looking like it could be a UFO abduction, but eventually evolves into something that's actually far more terrifying. I mean, because let's face it, you don't hear many cases of people being abducted by UFOs and killed. Like, that's just not a norm thing. But whatever happened here, these two poor kids died. And we're looking at 40 years, 45 years down the road. Their parents never got any answers. It's just horrible. All right. We're flying west, guys. We're
Let's
going
go
back
home.
To Vermont.
Vermont.
Yep, Bennington. The Lovely Bennington place. Triangle. You guys know about the Bennington Triangle?
Yes.
Isn't this the area where there's just massive amounts of reports of Bigfoot, UFOs, lake monsters, and disappearances?
Major disappearances. October 28th, 1950. Frieda Langer, who's 53, and her cousin Herbert were camping with a group of friends near the Somerset
Why are you
Reservoir.
You're shocked about that name. We talked about a guy named Herb like two weeks ago.
It's not the name. It's just like, if you're in your 50s, why are like you and your cousin going camping? I don't know. Just, the whole thing just seems weird to me.
Why not?
I don't know.
Some cousins get along with each other.
Sometimes they do. I don't know. October 28th, 1950. Frieda Langer, 53, and her cousin, Herbert.
Be nice to Herb.
Eisner. They're camping with a bunch of friends near the Somerset Reservoir, and they decide that they're going to go on a hike together. One point during the hike, Langer, the chickadee, falls into a stream.
That's two chickadees this episode? Really?
I didn't even know that I said it once before.
Jesus Christ.
Langer falls into a stream, tells her cousin, hey, I'm not injured. I just am really, really wet, so I'm going to run back to camp, change my clothes. I'll be right back. But they were super close to the campsite, so Herb's like, oh, totes, fine, great. I'm going to just wait here. Broad daylight, middle of the day. We're not talking night. We're not even talking dusk. He waits and waits and waits and waits and waits and waits and waits. And finally, an hour passes. He's like, what the hell is going on? So he walks back to the campsite to see what's taken her so damn long. She's nowhere to be seen. The other campers haven't seen her return. And literally, the distance was less than a quarter mile. So they start searching the area between the campsite and where she turned back. couldn't find anything. Eisner contacts authorities trying to find his cousin. They launch into this extensive search, preceded by four additional extensive searches. Over the next 2 weeks, they use dogs, helicopters. No trace of her, no scent of her, no single sign of her was found. In the following year, May 12, 1951, Langer's decomposed body was found in full view in an open clearing near Somerset Reservoir, which was an area that had been searched in every single one of those five searches. The body was so decomposed that a cause of death could not be determined. Nobody has any idea where the body was in between the time that it disappeared and the time it was found, because it certainly wasn't there.
In the later stages of decomposition at this point.
Right, right. So it had disappeared somewhere. This is one of those earliest, actually on record documented disappearances in the Bennington Triangle. Super creepy, eh?
I mean, I just know a man drug a decomposing body out of his weird cellar.
You think?
That would be my guess after he was done with it.
I mean...
God, that was a terrible done with it.
Well, it's a terrible crime.
Yeah, I'm...
This is one of the most interesting ones to me. You guys heard of the disappearing scuba diver?
I imagine a lot of them have, but I don't know the specific one.
Is this in the caves in Florida?
This has more to do with inner Earth.
Oh, no.
And it is Florida, yes, Sam.
Oh, okay, Sam knows this one.
Interesting. It's weird that you knew that. How did you know that, Sam?
Those caves are fascinating.
August 20th, 2010. This is a pretty recent one, peeps. Employees in the dive shop at Vortex Spring, which is north of Ponce de Leon, Florida.
Fancy.
They noticed that a pickup truck had remained in the shop's parking lot for the previous 2 days. The pickup truck happened to belong to one Ben McDaniel, 30 years old at the time, Tennessean. He'd been diving regularly at the spring while living at his parents' nearby beach house. Wish my parents had a beach house to go live at. He'd been seen by two of the employees on the evening of August 18th on a dive entering a cave 58 feet below the water's surface.
Ugh, that makes my skin crawl just thinking about it.
I know. One bit now.
While he was initially believed to have drowned on that dive, and his parents still strongly believe that his body is an inaccessible reach of the extensive cave system, there's been no trace of him ever found. So not a bit of his equipment, not a bit of him. Super, super, super weird. Despite that, the state of Florida issued a death certificate in 2013. Okay, so here's a little bit more about this story, though. This guy, Ben, became an open water diver when he was only 14. So he'd been scubaing for quite a while.
He's experienced.
Yeah, we've got 16 years. Unfortunately, he went on this dive unaccompanied and just before sunset. Bad combo. You don't want to be in a situation like that by yourself, middle of the night, no good. But on his way into the cave, he was passed by two divers on their way out. One of them was a commercial diver who worked for Vortex Spring. This guy's name was Eduardo Turan, and he had come to know Ben in the last few weeks as Ben had been staying at his parents' house and doing a bunch of diving. So Eduardo knows that Ben is kind of in an area that he's not supposed to be in. The only way you can get into this cave that he was specifically diving into is by having a key to the gate, which they're only given to cave-certified divers, or by jumping the gate that separated the cave from other common areas of the spring. Turan turned around and unlocked the gate for McDaniel, basically saying, I know you don't have a key, but I've seen you around here, you know what you're doing, you're fine. Bad move, shouldn't have done that. So on previous dives, Turan would sometimes wait for the sight of McDaniel's bubbles on the surface as an indication that he was decompressing and okay. On this evening, Turan and the other diver didn't wait to see those bubbles. No one knows if there ever were any. So kind of creepy, but the really weird thing to me is the depths to which he went and the cave that he went into. He's a big guy, so if he really did get stuck somewhere in there, first of all, it'd be really hard for him to wedge himself into there to get stuck. Second of all, something should have come loose, whether it was one of his flippers.
I mean, after his bloated body started breaking down,
yeah,
you would think that it would.
The current would have sloshed it gently out.
Is 6 years ago, guys.
I don't know.
Six
those
years.
Those wetsuits would probably fill up like a weird loose balloon.
Oh man, and just contain the whole.
Three teams of 16 divers searched for 36 consecutive days. They didn't find anything. Every crevice and opening of the cave was completely searched, with the exception of a constricted, dangerous area in the rear of the cave that even highly experienced divers had encountered difficulty entering. And based on Ben's size, it wasn't believed that it was even possible for him. In fact, it was firmly believed that it was utterly impossible for him to have gone into it. The owner of a place called Cave Adventures, which is a dive shop about an hour from Vortex Spring.
It's kind of like Ghost Adventures.
Kind of. He finally made his way into this area after attempting three separate times, and even in that area, didn't find any evidence that any diver had been in there. Couple weird things. Full air tanks were discovered outside the entrance of the cave. This is strange because the tanks were filled with regular air, which is inconsistent with what McDaniel would have presumably learned by reading up on cave diving. And he'd been doing this, so that wouldn't be what he was using. Second of all, divers put their extra air tanks along their way inside the cave, not outside the cave, so that it's within reach if they need to get back out and they're out of air. Makes sense. It is also weird that the truck went unnoticed for two whole days. Like, wouldn't you know the next morning, especially this Eduardo character who saw him swim in and open the gate for him to come back out?
I just always assume everything is A-okay and hunky-dory for everybody. No problems here.
Is that really what you would assume?
Gotta mind the business.
I never want to go scuba diving with
you. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I just don't care.
Yeah, well, Ben's parents, Shelby and Patty, offered $10,000 to any diver who could find any evidence of what had happened to Ben. Very, very creepy. Nothing ever found. And why was there nothing found? So some of the theories are that something happened to him and that it would cause a huge problem for the Vortex Springs area because essentially he was in a place he wasn't supposed to be, so they just got rid of the body. That's one of the theories, which would also explain why the truck was there for 2 days before being discovered. Okay, guys, I saved the best for last. We've got this really amazing mountain in Puerto Rico called El Yunque. And the story that I found is called Nights on Hell Mountain.
Okay.
I'm intrigued.
Apparently there have been tons of disappearances on this strange mountain in addition to other interesting things. As we've heard from some of the other stories tonight, there seem to be common themes with areas where these disappearances occur. UFOs, monster or weird unexplained creature sightings often accompany the disappearances themselves. 1974, there was this huge wave of UFO and cattle mutilation reports from around this area. A Puerto Rican television station aired a documentary recounting some of the really strange events that have happened on El Yunque Mountain. One of the stories involved a group of kids that were out camping and found themselves surrounded and besieged by bizarre creatures. Okay, so this mountain is in the middle of the rainforest. So kind of a mysterious place, especially for those of us who grow up in the northern lands of the states here. Rainforest seems pretty foreign and pretty creepy. I just think about all the bugs and the animals.
There's a million bugs.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Ones that people don't even... What was that? Okay.
There is also rumored in this area to be a subterranean base. You know, almost sounds like a little Dulce-ish. Keep in mind that Puerto Rico is an island. There's a ton of attention that comes to this island because of things like Chupacabra, because of things like the rainforest. There have been tons of UFO sightings on the island itself. So the whole island is a really interesting place. But this mountain, this hell mountain, people just keep disappearing on it. And it's happened for years and years. This story specifically highlights what might be happening to those people. Even though the story of these kids that were out camping, obviously, they didn't disappear because we got their story. But this might be why people are disappearing. October 20th, 1973. 9 campers, 3 adults, 6 students, are on El Yunque hoping to contact UFOs and their occupants. Very interesting that these adults decide it's a good idea to take these kids out there and actually try to contact some aliens.
To a place called Hell Mountain?
Well, yeah. So they camped pretty high up on a mountain trail, preparing to spend the night, not knowing that this might very well be the longest night of their entire lives. Mr. Heriberto, close to Herbert, but not quite, Heriberto Ramos, the group's official leader, stated that at one point during their ascent along the trail, they met 3 people that were heading down. There was nothing strange about them other than the fact that they all dressed exactly alike with similar features. One of the group members who had stayed behind took a photo of both of the other group members and the 3 mysterious walkers, but only a patch of mist appeared on the developed film where the trios stood. Moving right along, at a given moment in the night, thoroughly convinced that an otherwise uneventful vigil lay ahead, the campers were surrounded by 5 or 6 vaguely humanoid figures which darted about the thick vegetation with claw-like hands and elongated ears. Some of the monsters blocked the trail that would have been the only way out back down the mountain for these people. From kind of a safe distance, one of the creatures looked at poor Mr. Ramos very intently. Once Ramos noticed he was being watched, he tried to walk a little bit more cautiously toward this being, hoping to show that their intentions were kind and not frightening, and that these creatures with claws and long ears had nothing to fear from the 6 children and 3 adults that were camping. At one point, Ramos got within 10 feet of the creature and was able to describe it as having a triangular head and extraordinary eyes. He managed to touch the creature,
boop,
which didn't move or stir. Its skin felt neither cold nor rubbery. What it did feel
there's so
is
many
unclear,
other things.
But it was not cold, nor was it
rubbery.
Right.
Oh, it could have been salty or umami,
I guess. At the same time, one of the students lit a large powered flashlight in the direction where the contact was taking place. The clawed creature reacted by racing away from the scene, literally tearing a path right through the dense vegetation, which led to a 100-foot drop. And poor Ramos is sitting there going, oh no, we've scared this poor creature into jumping. However, Ramos was amazed when suddenly it reappeared at the side of its fellows, which were blocking the downward path. So apparently he knew enough to be able to recognize this one as distinct from the other ones. And even though it ran in one direction, it appeared in a completely different direction. So apparently they're like teleport capable.
Wow. Now we're really talking.
Really, really, really scary. So this is happening for hours. I mean, obviously the kids are awake, the adults are awake. These beings are surrounding them, and they just keep moving all around. Again, doesn't that sound kind of like the darting creatures in the woods by Surrey?
Yeah.
Okay, this is the part that I almost don't want to read, but I kind of have to.
I think you have to.
Now you're obligated.
Absolutely.
Terror had led one of the students to bang himself repeatedly on the head with a flashlight, hoping to escape the situation by passing out.
That's what Sam does sometimes. Sometimes he calls me in the middle of the night saying, it didn't work. She's still here, and so am I.
I can't see as well, but
it's terrible.
Still.
Stop it. So this poor kid is, I don't know why somebody hasn't removed the flashlight from his hand after the first hit, but apparently they're just letting him beat the shit out of himself.
There's more important things to deal with.
You got some creatures.
Another camper had some very strange desire to take a walk in the woods. Again, they let him do it. They're fearing for his mental state, but one of his companions offered to walk with him. So these two kids take off. These are the worst chaperones ever, just for the record. Okay. So these two kids go walking off into the woods. Before they'd taken more than a dozen steps, they found what could only be described as a glimmering polychromatic egg laying on the ground.
Okay.
Okay. You know what?
12 steps is not that far, first of all.
You know what this is starting to remind me of? The creature that they brought out at Mel's Hole.
Oh, no, we haven't seen...
I mean, it's just like that kind of a story.
This actually reminds me quite a bit of a**es. Oops.
Byron.
I'm sorry.
Fucking Byron.
So they're looking at this creepy-looking egg. Neither one of them wanted to touch it because they were scared. But they later saw it in the claws of one of the creepy creatures. So later on that night, one of the creepy creatures is carrying around this egg.
All right.
They thought it could have been bait of some sort, trying to mesmerize the prey, aka the humans. Finally, the sun comes up. The campers make a mad dash for the cars that they'd left parked at the bottom of the mountain. And there was no trace of the alien intruders aside from their footprints, which were much larger than a human's and appeared to have been made by very heavy creatures in comparison to the smaller footprints left by the humans.
Were these bipedal creatures?
Yes.
Oh.
So these campers, now that the sun's up, they're feeling a little bit more brave. So they go back up, make plaster of Paris casts of the prints, and photograph the prints. These materials were stolen by unknown parties months after the incident, including the valuable infrared prints.
That's pretty standard.
Yeah.
You lie about doing something and then claim it's stolen.
Super, super creepy. That's one of the coolest ones. There's also another story where these college kids go up the mountain and run into some really creepy intruders as well. Not a place that I would venture, but a very interesting place. And again, the center of all of these disappearances. I don't know. Maybe we've got like these weird portals going on all over the place, guys.
Sure.
Some strange places where things get in and then other things accidentally get out.
Dimensional cracks.
Yeah.
Micro tears in the fabric between worlds.
Tonight, we talked about disappearances of individuals. Next episode, we're going to talk about disappearances of larger groups, which may or may not include a very famous disappearance on the east coast of the United States of an entire colony.
Ooh, a little bit of tease for a part two.
Dos.
Oh, you say it every time.
Los
Spanish dos. Spanish again.
The well, dos.
This was a Spanish piece here. We just finished up with Puerto Rico.
Thank you so much for that report.
Thanks, you guys.
Yeah, we appreciate it. That was exciting.
Good report, Cal. Fun stuff.
So, you guys, I'm not going to lie. The first time that I saw the Blair Witch Project, what, 17 years ago?
17 years ago. If we had a child the first time we saw it, not you and I, just in general, all of us.
I don't know why.
Don't do it, man.
They'd be a senior in high school.
They'd be able to watch it.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
But the first time I saw it in the theater when I was just a wee little bit of a thing was the most horrific movie-going experience of my life, which makes it almost serendipitous that going to see Blair Witch this weekend now has taken the place as the most horrific movie-going experience of my entire life.
Let's talk about Blair Witch.
Hope you're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
Whoa. All right. I was just getting rolling.
Still recovering from the movie. I'm sorry.
Blair Witch is a 2016 American found footage horror film directed by Adam Wingard and written by Simon Barrett. Sam, can you tell us what this movie's about?
After discovering a video showing what he believes to be his sister's experiences in the demonic woods of the Blair Witch, James and a group of friends head to the forest in search of his lost sibling.
Kelly, let's continue off of your thoughts of the original Blair Witch Project.
The original Blair Witch was just one of a kind. I realized that there had been found footage movies before that, but for the vast majority of moviegoers, myself included, this was really the first found footage film they had seen. I also wholeheartedly bought into the fact that this was a true story when I went to go see it. The marketing was brilliant, which I revisited recently, and it is incredible. I mean, they created trial documents from fake trials that happened. They went real, real deep with it to a degree that very few directors have committed to going since, which is interesting.
I don't think in our modern time we could really get away with something like that with the internet. And
well, the internet was there then. It was just
very early stages. They actually had one of the first websites attached to a film.
It was amazing. Anyhow, it scared the shit out of me. I was literally crying at the end of it. I never wanted to go camping again. I actually think I've only gone into the woods a couple times since then for an overnight experience, because it still does haunt me, even though obviously I know it's not true. It still scares the shit out of me, and I think about it all
the
time.
No, the first one was
real. This one, I went in pretty skeptical, because the first one had been such an incredible experience for me. And let's just not even talk about the sequel, Blair Witch 2, because it doesn't even deserve to be named.
I actually didn't think it was as bad as everyone seemed.
Yeah, you.
I wanted to live in that house.
I think that Book of Shadows is going to have a revival similar to Halloween 3.
God,
people are
going to
be like, hey,
not.
It wasn't that bad. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, if you look at it as something different.
I don't know. I haven't seen it in a long time. People are going to be mad at me, aren't they?
It's been a while for me, too.
This was just a very interesting experience for me, because I went in not wanting to damage one of my favorite movie going experiences.
And we purposely didn't watch the trailers beyond. Did you even see the first one?
Nope,
the first
I watched
no research,
nothing.
No trailers.
Nothing.
I saw the first trailer, but I know that there was two put out after that I didn't see at all. And your thoughts on Adam Wingard?
I love Your Next, although certainly didn't love it as much as the first Blair Witch Project.
Okay.
And it was a very different kind of movie. So I was a little bit skeptical about how exactly he was going to go about presenting this movie. Spoiler alert.
Already? Maybe we should just say that we're going to spoil this whole movie.
Well, I mean, really, really liked it, you guys. I went in scared to death that this was going to be ruined for me. And I'm not going to lie, there was some dialogue in the first part and some forced pieces that felt a little heavy-handed. But very quickly, the plot took off and they avoided things that I was so happy they avoided. They went further into things that had scared me previously, and I left that theater feeling utterly nauseous.
Very ill.
From the movement of the camera, but also very terrified because it had been, I feel like it was done really well. Apparently, the universe doesn't necessarily agree with me.
We'll get into that later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Once we talk about our thoughts. Yeah. I was nervous before the movie and during, because you were dry heaving next to me, which was kind of frustrating.
I wasn't dry heaving. I just kept leaning forward trying not to puke.
You were doing like weird coughs.
Yeah.
Like those pre-dog coughs. A nightmare.
My best friend and her husband came with us too, and she literally has motion sickness.
Yeah, it seemed like it.
So she was dying, and I was was so concerned. And she also has sympathetic puking issues. So it's like Stand By Me. Sure. Like if one person throws up, she would have been gone. So I couldn't throw up.
Well, don't throw up in a theater, even though there was just about eight of us.
It was wonderful. That is worth noting that this was a really, really noteworthy, in a good way, cinema going experience.
And I told
us.
You guys it was going to be.
You knew that no one was going to be there.
Yeah. You were right.
Yeah, because it was a Thursday night.
Yeah, we went to the first showing on a Thursday. Not a bad experience.
The theaters have won you guys back.
I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I was extremely skeptical, but I knew that if anyone could do it, Adam could. I'm a huge fan of Adam Wingard's stuff. A Horrible Way to Die. His segments in VHS are great. I think he's a very good director. I was nervous because he's never done found footage like this before. He did with VHS his segment with the eye implant. Not necessarily found footage in a traditional sense.
It was POV though.
It was POV. Went crazy with spinning cameras around. I wasn't as sick as you two, Sam especially.
Sam actually had to get up and leave. Yeah.
Well, I stood up. I was only gone for about 2 minutes and I watched the rest from standing in the back of the theater.
Very spinny film, but Kelly, I completely agree with you. I had so much fun on this movie.
It was so enjoyable. And the one thing that I think made the first one terrifying was they showed almost nothing. So much was left to your imagination. All of our listeners know what a big fan I am of that.
What you're thinking about being scarier than what's on the screen.
This one did very, very similar.
Continued the tradition, even though it added elements that were more supernatural than I was expecting.
Yes, I agree.
But they did it in a way that it wasn't overwhelming to me. And it was still, it retained the scariness of reality without making it.
And then they brought in Grave Encounters and just went wham, and it was great.
All right, let's not bring Grave Encounters, a middling at best found footage film.
But have you guys ever seen that whole idea presented anywhere else other than this and Grave Encounters? I haven't.
I don't know. Can we talk about technical elements a little bit more?
Yeah, I'll let you guys do that. All right. Also, we don't know what Sam thought of it because Sam hasn't talked.
Yeah, wait, Sam. Yeah, what's up?
Well, the Blair Witch Project totally immersed myself in. It was the first kind of thing that I really got into that I had an opportunity to research on the internet when it came out. I had to go to a friend's house to use their internet.
AOL.
And it was AOL.
Keyword, Blair Witch.
Yeah. I was fully aware of the fact that it was not a documentary, wasn't a real occurrence when I went into it.
And you're trying to wet blanket everyone's fun?
Well, I didn't know. I was just so into it. I immersed myself in it and I loved thinking about it and, you know, kind of scaring myself with the mythology. So I think when I went into it, a lot of that initial shock value that I think people still have really warm feelings about this movie because of is due to that at least niggling suspicion in the back of your head that, wow, did this really happen? I never had that experience. I robbed myself of it. It didn't hit me as hard as I think it hit people who went in intelligently without knowing about it. Yeah.
Wasn't this the film that you did throw up in? Didn't you go with your family to the Blair Witch Project and someone threw up?
That was The Hobbit.
Oh, okay. The 3D experience of The Hobbit. That makes sense.
I had pretty high expectations for this one because Barrett and Wingard, they had to operate under the assumption that their audience has seen The Blair Witch and possibly Book of Shadows and knows that this is, you know, a fictional construct. And so you have to operate without that kind of crutch of people believing that it's real. So you have to do something to take it to the next level and expand on the mythology, which I think they did really well. And I was sick as shit.
Yeah, you were not looking good.
I missed about 2 minutes of it because I just had to leave the theater. But other than that, 2 minutes, which I can't comment on, I loved this movie. I liked it better than the original, which I know is going to probably put me in a minority, but I really liked it.
I can understand it, though.
Yeah, there was a lot of transitional things that Adam did that I thought made this movie his. When they were cutting between audio, they had these kind of like wind noises and like some really like intense ruffling of mics between cuts. And I thought it was really a great way to do it without snapping it. Also, when they brought in the DV camera, that was such a great use of less quality equipment. They meet up with this team who found a tape, a couple who have a YouTube page that posts spooky stuff. They found this tape in the woods. They obviously don't have the capabilities to record stuff the same way that this team has. They've got, I guess we could get into characters. I don't know how much we actually need to. Heather Donahue's brother,
James,
and several of his friends decide to try to find the truth about Heather, hopefully learn a little bit more.
And Lisa is, I think, a film student who is doing a project on the legacy of the Blair Witch on James and his family.
Yeah, they enter into this project similarly to As Above, So Below, with headset cameras, a drone. When you meet up with this other team and they have this DV camera, for you millennials that don't know what a DV camera is, it's these mini tapes. It's what I had in high school. It's of lesser quality, but apparently they do better in low light.
At least that was the reasoning that was given to us by Lane and Talia.
What I think that did, the use of the DV camera, the lower qualities, it really was a great way to bring in the feel of the original film while still having these other shots. It was incredible. It gave me the same feeling that I had the first time I watched. I saw that.
It did. It kind of countered all of the state-of-the-art filming equipment that they were using with a real gritty, like, guerrilla underground sensibility.
Raw.
Like,
yeah.
Raw, like the first movie was.
Which I have to admit, that first scene where they're doing like equipment checks, which is, I guess, the standard in found footage films now. They're like, hey, is it working? Is it rolling? That scene had me kind of nervous. I didn't really need to see a drone shot of anything. And I know it came into play in a useful way later on in the movie. But I didn't want a whole movie of 4K video.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
It made sense. I mean, Lisa had the resources of her film department, were led to believe, at school. So it makes sense that she would have that equipment and you would take that with you. I mean, those are things you would take.
Okay, guys, I don't know how much longer I can wait. Can we do dead giveaways, or are we not going to do dead giveaways?
We have to. I mean,
is it a giveaway to talk about how Lane and his role plays in?
It's time for dead giveaways.
Dead giveaways.
This is the point in the show where we spoil a movie. If you don't want this movie ruined, I highly recommend you pause and watch Blair Witch in theaters as soon as possible before continuing.
And don't listen to the goddamn reviews, you guys.
Holy cow.
Seriously.
Yeah, what's going on
out
there?
People are just kind of being dicks about this movie.
Which is interesting. I mean, to be honest, I was worried, but I kind of thought I was going to like it.
Sure.
I wasn't sure you guys were going to be sold on it. And the fact that you guys are sold on it makes me really happy.
It's definitely kind of selfish reasoning. I like the original, and I think that they didn't fuck it up.
You guys pop a Bonine before you go. Like, go get some chewable raspberry-flavored Bonine.
I thought you said pop a boner.
Yeah, I totally thought that's what you said.
I said pop a Bonine before you go.
Is that like a Dramamine?
Yeah, except you don't fall asleep.
Okay.
Go take a Bonine, and I wish I would have. But here's the deal. Lane and his girlfriend are the ones that discovered this tape that gave James hope that his sister might still be alive.
Because and posted it on YouTube.
They posted it on YouTube. James tracks them down. It just so happens that they live right next to the woods. They're kind of weirdos. They've got a Confederate flag on the inside of their trailer. They're just very strange, but it's apparent that they've grown up.
They listen to black metal.
God help those people. They've grown up in this area very clearly. And they basically tell James and his crew that the only way they're going to show them where they found this tape is if they can go out camping with them. Now, one point that I remained unclear on, as they go out into the woods, the first night they hear this weird shit going on. The next morning, there are some sticks hanging. The spooky Blair Witch sticks. But weirder, they don't wake up until 2 in the afternoon, which is pretty strange. So that feels like something's going on with time.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Now they realize.
Is that an element that was brought in the original Blair Witch Project? I don't think so, right?
No.
I really don't believe so.
No.
Sam's suspicious. Kelly.
No, honestly haven't seen it since the first time I saw it. And I feel like they were waking up at weird times and kind of lost track of the days in the original.
It was just
they were stuck. Okay. Stuck.
Stop it, everyone.
So they realize pretty quickly as they start moving down the road that Lane...
Metaphorical road. There's no road.
Moving down the trail, that Lane and his girlfriend staged the creepy sticks because they're trying to get them to believe that there's something going on out here. Now, I think that they're also saying that Lane staged the video footage.
Which is not possible.
But it's not possible as the later pieces of the film reveal. So Lane is accused of staging the footage that he released on YouTube. He didn't, though. Let me just tell you, since we're in dead giveaways, he didn't. And they get really pissed at Lane and his girlfriend and basically tell them to go away.
You get out of here.
Yeah, so they go away.
They shoo up.
And shit gets worse and they fall asleep the next night. And
oh, and then we forgot to mention that Ashley cut her foot while crossing a stream.
And it becomes really rapidly infected.
It's not doing good.
No,
and it's got
cabin fever
moving inside of it, which I never understood. They never really explained that away. other than maybe she was possessed by a witch that crawled through the stones.
Woods, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, really, I think that's it. It's just everything there is poisonous and corrupted and evil.
Second night, shit starts going more wrong. Peter goes off into the woods trying to find some sticks.
We're not
going to
go kill by kill, are we?
Well, I'm just going to say Peter goes off in the woods trying to find more sticks. Shit starts happening to him. Everything starts ramping up. Everybody's terrified. The alarm goes off on Lisa's phone. It's 7 o'clock in the morning, but it's still pitch black outside.
It's nighttime.
And they just fell asleep.
This is where the Grave Encounters piece comes in. Because this whole idea of now time is completely screwed for them. That's very scary. That's very, very scary.
It's almost like you're in hell.
Yeah, it really is. They start running through the woods. Stuff starts getting picked up. Lane's girlfriend comes back and gets snapped in half.
Well, that was an interesting little scene we won't dive too deep into.
But guess what, you guys? They find the house.
They do find the house.
Yeah, they find the house. One of my favorite parts of the whole movie is when they're standing outside the house and Lisa's telling James not to go in because James thinks he's seen his sister in the window. And Lisa's like, no, that's not your sister. I don't know what happened to your sister, but that's not her. She's not up there. It can't be her. And James goes running in and you see in the woods this white, it honestly, you guys are going to laugh at me, but it honestly looks like an alien. This white spindly creature, and you get just a quick glimpse of it, which was so perfect.
I thought they did a great job with that.
This creepy creature, which you presume is the witch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Out behind a tree, and then Lisa ends up running into the house too because she's scared shitless.
Yeah, they expand on the mythos in two points that I'll bring up now.
Yeah, oh, good point.
The makeshift stretching of the witch, which was, I think, a very interesting. Lane goes into the details of them stringing her up in the tree and then stretching her out by adding weights to her legs. And secondly, the reasoning behind why Josh was staring in the corner, the fact that you cannot look at the Blair Witch or else you'll die.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if that was Josh or if it was Peter.
No, originally, though, in the
original,
reasoning behind why Josh was staring in the corner.
Absolutely.
The whole thing about you can't look at the Blair Witch or you'll die from fright, which I don't know. Also, AKA being maybe torn apart.
Die from awfulness.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that was a really great explanation of why that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it definitely takes liberties and guts for Adam to come up with that as a reasoning. I know that that's the question everyone had in 1999 leaving the theater. They're like, what the fuck is going on? So,
yeah, very, very scary. And it's pretty cool because the whole time thing winds around when Lisa's running through the halls of this creepy house and runs past this old mirror. And suddenly you get a shot that is the shot that was uploaded to YouTube at the beginning of the movie, which is this weird fucked up time loop that's totally creepy and unsettling.
Yeah, that's what hit me during the beginning of our conversation. I didn't even think about that. That part, that's interesting.
It's super interesting. You get one more glimpse of the creepy witch as she's trying to trick everybody into turning around and not facing the corner because they're about ready to get eaten, destroyed, disemboweled, whatevered by her. But guess what, guys? There's this really cool part where light comes pouring in all the windows.
Through the slats in the walls.
Stop it.
I'm sorry.
I see where this is going.
Stop it.
I'm not saying that it was aliens, but holy shit,
and this
it
has
felt
been
like
our
aliens.
Review of
Blair Witch.
You guys have to admit that that felt like an alien moment. That felt like something out of the fourth kind is what it felt like.
I just took it as maybe energy or chaos, maybe, because it's a very supernatural scene. It's disorienting, and I think it shows that the house maybe
has magical...
I'd like
to talk to Wingard about whether the witch is just actually a creepy alien.
Maybe someday we'll do that.
Okay. Really, though, it gets very scary. You see the witch.
Yeah, scared.
She tricks...
I was very scared. I was scared in this movie.
Yeah, I was super scared.
I think it did a great job. It had one little shake break in the middle, which was nice. They set a camera up stationary were doing the Bigfoot cams.
Yeah,
if they only would have left it there for like 20 minutes, I might not have felt like dying for the 24 hours after the movie got out.
Like the shake intermission. I thought that was perfect. Oh. We needed it. I wonder if that was something that after screening the film, they're like, we need to add something.
Yeah. We need to give people a break.
It's very interesting because they didn't ever mention those cameras really in a significant sense. So that's interesting.
And it ends in a really interesting way. I'm really disappointed that the reviews haven't been great because I would love to see a third one because it was so good.
Maybe in 17 years.
I'd take it in two.
What are your final thoughts on this movie?
My final thoughts are, as a diehard original Blair Witch fan, it did not disappoint. There were points where the acting kind of got annoying at the beginning, but it really dissipated quickly for me, and the story was strong enough to drive it. And then when things got ramped up, I thought all the actors did a great job. I loved the visuals, the way that they showed the witch, and just the amount that they showed the witch was perfect, in my opinion. And I would give it an 8.8.
Wow, strong words.
What are your words, Sam?
I really, really like this movie. I wish I hadn't been so sick for it, but that was my failing. That was not the filmmaker's failing.
You have to give them a little bit of responsibility. Yeah. For that.
Well, they could have stabilized things a little bit. For me, one of the things that I hate about found footage movies is the contrived ways that they get people into scenarios with cameras. Like, what are they doing? Like, no, that's not, doesn't make any sense. This makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
It's a follow up to the Blair Witch tapes. So I bought into it. There was reason for him to have all the equipment. That was great. I thought that the acting was really good. I thought it fit perfectly. The effects were great. The tension kind of ramped up really quickly and got real serious and kept that idea until it climaxed. This was a scary movie. And I think Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett have really done justice to the Blair Witch mythology here. And I'm going to give it a 7.9.
It's the Blair Witch. It was quite the risk for Adam to approach this project. I think he did a great job expanding on the mythos without discrediting anything I saw or held dear in the original film. The progression and breakdown of the characters was natural, and the equipment that was used was a great way to make a modern found footage film not seem like it's going out of its way to be a modern found footage film. It impressed me. I loved it. I give it an 8.
Oh, you guys, we all liked it.
0.8. I meant, it's a terrible film. You should be ashamed.
That's
Adam.
Just a kidding. Is
That's
what
a
it
Josh.
Is.
That's a bit
Little
of a
jest.
It's a Josh. It's a corner stare.
A jest among friends.
And
here.
That's our thoughts on Blair Witch. Go check this movie out, and I'm sure a handful of you have. So why don't you let us know your thoughts? And maybe you're like every other reviewer that hates this film. I'd love to hear why you don't like it or why you do at Frightday on Twitter. Whoo, Sam, do you ever got to run? You have to run.
I got to go to work.
Run,
you,
Sam. Run.
Why don't you say goodbye?
All right.
Run.
Fine, man.
See you later.
I'm out of here. Jeez.
All right. Bye,
Sam. Bye, Samwell. I love you.
We're going to do our 90th episode party without you.
We are.
Popping bottles.
Yeah, not Byron cider. And I, pregnant Kelly, non-drinking Sam and Byron. We're going to just be chugging it up.
As we roll into the spooky season again.
Yeah.
Next week's going to be kind of fun.
It's going to be really fun.
We're talking American Horror Story.
Yeah.
A series which, Kelly, I have to admit, after,
you doubted me.
Well, it was months.
You doubted the shit out of me.
It was months ago. You said you believed that this is the Roanoke colony season.
Mm-hmm.
And then they dropped two dozen trailers. Very misleading.
Pretty misleading. But you know who they didn't mislead? Me, because I had faith, because I knew exactly what it was. Yeah. I knew what it was going to be.
And next week we're going to talk all about it.
Thank God.
Including a little chat about what the Roanoke colony is.
Yeah, the history of the Roanoke colony. We're going to talk about it, some theories about what could have happened. And we're going to talk about, hopefully, a couple other stories of similar creepiness.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Should be exciting.
Until then, just give us all your money on Patreon.
Okay, settle down.
Buy a lot of t-shirts.
We're not just taking your money.
No, we give you so much.
Like a special episode of Captain Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies every month.
Every month.
This month.
The Philadelphia Experiment.
Very exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Our Haunting Season t-shirt should be up pretty soon in the next 2 weeks, which will be very great. Available only to Patreon patrons, as well as Sam's playlist and a weekly hangout with us before the show on Periscope.
Yeah, which, you guys, the more of you that jump on and say that it's okay for Kelly to sing during those,
stop
the
it.
Better.
And the more of you that support us on Patreon, the sooner we can do more. I know we're talking about commentaries. We had a request on our Facebook group this week, which is facebook.com/group/Frightday, where you can hang out with everyone.
Right.
They want mini episodes that are reviews of old movies.
Which, you know who suggested that a while ago?
How about just shush.
I mean, one of these days, you guys are going to understand that Kate knows what she's doing.
Yeah. The sooner you help us out on Patreon, the sooner we're going to be able to spend a lot more time on this project.
Yes.
Patreon.com/Frightday. Also, most helpful of all, you could leave us a review on iTunes. This moves us up the charts. We've been in front of Sci Friday for over a month now, so congratulations.
It's like, I don't even know what to do with it.
It's kind of weird that now we, when you search our name, we're not Science Friday.
Which I think is good. I think that's good for our brand, Byron.
It's great for our brand. Speaking of our brand, you can check out all the latest trailers, news, and reviews at Frightday.com.
Indeed.
We have a great team of writers that help us out.
We actually, honestly, our writing team has gotten to be, I think perhaps a little more professional than us, Byron.
Well, we're busy folks. Come on.
Yeah,
now.
But they're impressive folks.
They're all impressive. I'm not denying that. Speaking of reviews, we have one right here from someone called Weird Times. I don't know if that's a publication, like the Weird Times.
We should check it out.
Yeah, maybe. Fright Day's great. 5 stars. Love this podcast. The reviews are spot on. Kelly's Cryptids rules, and it's just generally fun to listen to. Also, most of the movies they review are easily found on Netflix/other streaming sites. My only complaint is that Sam's I Hate Everything in Kelly's Stupid Act gets old pretty quick. However, the podcast is great.
Yeah. Yeah. You hear that, Samuel?
You can't hear it. He's not here.
He's not here. That's unfortunate. I need to read that to him later.
I don't think so. Lots of things coming up in the future for us. We've got some interesting ideas.
I think we've got a lot of interesting ideas. We've got a lot of interesting content. We've got amazing fans. And I like this idea of like a mini throwback episode.
Come on. We'll figure it out. But Kelly, where can people talk to you on the internet?
Oh, you can find me at Kelly Fright Day on Twitter, or you can email me kelly@frightday.com. The more the merrier, please.
And I'm at Byron McCoy. Byron@frightday.com is my email address.
It is.
And until next Fright Day, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam.
You don't need to.
And I hate everything and Kelly's stupid.
What do we got?
We're going to talk
What do we got?
What do we got?
Well,
we got some fucking disappearances?
We got some people that disappeared.